and welcome to MILF Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous. I'm Sophie Venable, psychologist, life coach, mother of two, and author of MILF 101, Make Your Life Fabulous. Whether you're married with children, single, divorced, or somehow all of the above, I am talking to you about life, relationships, and of course, whenever possible, sex. Has your man been a little moody lately? That would be my question to you. Is he looking at sports cars? Is he talking about a new career? Keep listening. My guest today is 50-something. And I know that seems a little rude to mention his age.
I can't believe you just weren't more specific.
I know. Well, you know. Well, it's relevant. There. He is 55 and looking good. This makes him, by his own definition, a midman. So today's show is for the midmen out there and the women who love them. He's a very entertaining fella, the king of tangential humor, as far as I'm concerned.
That'll be easy to follow.
Yeah, totally. Just stay on your toes, people. He's written a book for you called Midmen, The Modern Man's Guide to Surviving Midlife Crisis, available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon and also Barnes & Noble. He's going to explain to us a few things that we might want to know about Midman to help us better understand each other. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Steve Oates. Yay! It's nice to be applauded just for being Steve Oakes, right?
It's nice to applaud myself.
Congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
It is hilarious and helpful.
Thank you.
This is what I like about it. So what was your inspiration?
Seriously?
I had a
really gigantic midlife crisis. Now it's been a few years ago. You can get past a midlife crisis, and I'd like to think that I have. I have other crises, of course, to entertain me.
So when you you would consider it a crisis, like something that you can go in and out of. It's not like once you turn a certain age, you're just in crisis forever.
Oh no,
that's what you're trying to help avoid.
I don't think it's any more permanent than you know. The crisis of turning 18 or the crisis of turning 30. They're talking about quarter life crisis now, and I think that's a legitimate crisis. So I think there are several crises or these sort of hurdles that we'll have to clear over the course of our lives.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. And I do think you can clear it. You can clear it. It doesn't necessarily mean you will. You might have been nuts going in. You might be nuts coming out. It might be a different kind of nuts for a little while.
Right, but if you read this book, you might actually be able to navigate your way through it a little better.
In fact, unless you read this book, you can't.
Okay, it's a requirement.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
Thank God I wrote this thing.
Thank God.
Yeah.
So I want to say, because I appreciate that you're also explaining to your male audience that their wives of a similar age are also going through quite a shitstorm from Mother Nature.
Probably a worse shitstorm than ours.
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but I'm glad that you did.
No, I believe it is. Honestly, ours is nothing compared to our wives or significant others or females in general.
It is this other side of mortality. It's kind of like nature's done with you. You're done making babies, so it just starts to turn shit off. It's just like the switches start to go off, and you do everything you can to keep them on.
Yeah,
it's work.
And I think the impact on women is probably more physically intrusive than it is for men. We have a couple of things happen. You know, we do some things more often, some things less often.
Mm-hmm. Things that we may talk about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But with women, there is beyond just the physical, which is mm-hmm. significant.
Yeah.
There is also societal, which I think for women is even more – not that it's insignificant for men, but probably more significant for women.
Yeah, you mean it just in our value, that we become devalued the older we get.
And this is a very – I think this is probably a very American point of view. I think this would be a different conversation in France, specifically for women. But here in America, yeah, that's – and a lot of the Western world, yeah.
Well, let's start with that topic about men as well, because you were saying that in many ways men at this age start to – feel too that they become invisible to society. So tell us a little bit more about that.
It's almost worse than being invisible. Actually, I think we're unfortunately we can't hide in plain sight. I had an experience. I was in Urban Outfitters, and there was a young woman working behind me. I'm just using this as an illustration because it probably happens five times a day. And there's a young woman working behind the counter, and she is sexy. She's overtly sexy. She is dressed to be sexy. She is feeling the full flower
of her sexy.
She's sexy.
Yeah.
And I'm 55. So she's young and sexy and I'm 55. She knows she's young and sexy and she knows I'm a man and she knows I'm 55 or whatever age she assumes me to be. I'm too old for her is the age I am.
Okay.
And I felt dirty just being there. And I wasn't doing anything wrong.
Right.
I was just making a purchase. I was buying a shirt. And for her. No.
With a little note tucked in the pocket. Not inappropriate at all.
No, certainly not. Yeah. A little phone number. Then.
Right.
No, seriously, though. I was just making a purchase.
You can't turn off the fact until the day you die that young, beautiful women are beautiful women. Like, there's nothing you can do about that.
But the worst thing is that they know that we can't turn that off. That's the hard part of this.
Do you think that they actually put a lot of thought into that, or what do you mean that they know it?
You can tell by the way they don't look at us. There's a line in the book.
Oh, sort of like I don't want to attract your attention
I can't even make eye contact with you because I know that I have the power to destroy your life.
You're so vulnerable, you men. I get it. But I think that we forget that our men – I shouldn't say that. I don't think everybody forgets. I think that some women really fear this part of their partner's psyche. And I think to some degree we just have to accept and sort of celebrate the fact that you're always going to find a beautiful woman beautiful. Like, I mean, if that turns off, that means there's probably something wrong on some level.
I don't think it's a question of the acknowledgement, the aesthetic acknowledgement of beauty. I think it's well beyond that.
Well, let's talk about, okay, then inner sexy. You're not going to ever be non-responsive to that which is on any level attractive, okay? Because it could, like you said, I mean, maybe on some people's scale, somebody might be less classically beautiful than other, but people have an inner sexiness or an inner vibe that they give off.
Right.
And you as a man, you would have to like shut down part of you to not be affected by that. Am I correct?
That's right. And women are innately aware of that. And people vibe. You know, people have like gaydar.
Yeah.
Well, there's also straightar. You know what I mean? So if you're looking at a beautiful young woman and you're a straight guy, the world knows.
Right.
You know what I mean? The universe tells the story.
Yes.
There's a line, you know you're a mid-men when. There's like a little list.
Yes.
It's almost like a Jeff Foxworthy kind of thing. You know you're a mid-men when in the book. And one of them is, you can't stop looking at young women who can't stop not giving a shit. And that's kind of what happens. And there's a defense mechanism they put in place where, yes, they will not even acknowledge your humanness. Forget your manness. They can't even go as far as to engage with your humanness because your manness is so easily activated.
Is it fair to say that you feel a little like you're put in a creep category even if you're not creeping?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, even I am by definition. It's profiling.
Well, damn it. Knock it off, people.
And frankly, it's fairly legitimate and not, you know, it has some accuracy. Because it is the truth. In the spirit of confession, I will say
you were thinking she was hot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So for her to go, oh, Christ, this old guy thinks I'm hot.
Right.
Well, she's right.
Well, I guess
it would be nice if she could just sort of, you know,
just say like thanks.
Or not say it.
I don't mean say it.
Just
but,
be.
You know, but just be.
I can enjoy it.
The fact that that's the vibe you're putting off today.
Yeah.
And enjoy that it's received. And this is, you know, something I call the man-woman dance. You know,
okay.
Like I think it's part of the dance that it would be nice if in our culture we could do this and feel safer. And I don't even mean that there would actually be a verbal
flirtation. I totally get you.
That we could all just acknowledge, well, yes, we are sexual beings. And even if it's not sexual, sometimes you just find somebody attractive.
Yep.
You know, like they give off a vibe that you just want to know.
Right. But it doesn't mean you're going to sell your house and run off with
exactly.
them.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean you're not going to like necessarily slip them your hotel key.
Which is why I say this would be a different conversation in France. And I'm not joking.
Because
in France, women, not only it would be a different conversation even about age. Everything would be different.
Sure.
The whole dynamic of this conversation, because there is a self-possession that women seem to have over there, and I guess I'm profiling, but there's a self-possession that women seem to have over there where they're not afraid to be beautiful women and they're not disturbed by men knowing that.
Right. They just embrace their femininity.
It's all good.
It is what it is.
It's all good at any age.
Right.
It's all good.
Which is lovely.
So it's a very different culture. However, this show is not broadcast there. So this is a conversation about America.
Well, it could be.
Not true. Well, if you're in France, très bon.
So on the flip side of it, you also talk about decreased libido.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Talk to us a little bit about this and what this means. Well, you mentioned a few things. You mentioned actually in some cases how the woman's libido is going up, but we're gonna talk about that later. But
one of God's little tricks.
Yes. However, but it becomes more complicated, right? So that's another show. So the sports car, the young girl, the things like this, is that the adrenaline that sparks the libido? What's all this about? Does it freak you out that your libido is lower, or what is this experience like for you guys?
I think those are two different issues.
Okay.
I think the lessening libido in the sports car and the young woman are well, the sports car and the young woman are the same issue, but when you add libido to it, it is a different issue.
So what should we understand about our men around this?
Well, in the case of a lowered libido, that's a fact of life. It's anatomical fact of life. It's the way it is. We are reducing our and by the way, I outline the whole thing in the book. Literally, I go into the chemistry of it. That in both cases, it deals with the male hormones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where men are losing male hormones and women are actually gaining male hormones. So sex drive is directly related to that in both cases.
Yeah.
You have your protein.
Testosterone.
It's testosterone.
Yeah.
So your proteins are changing and you're supplementing yourself with more testosterone. And that's why women are becoming, as they get older, they're becoming more sexually interested because they're having a raised level of testosterone.
And an occasional chin hair.
That's just part of the game. And conversely, men are reducing their testosterone and therefore their libidos are dropping. So it is chemical in both cases.
Which makes it less personal.
Well, that's
when you understand that.
If you can acknowledge that.
Right.
But to go to the car and the chick. The car and the chick is not about sex specifically, in my opinion.
Okay.
The car and the chick is about self-image. You are not the man you once were. The sports car still is a sports car and the chick is still a chick. So you want to associate with things that are permanently or currently youthful. If you are not feeling currently youthful. So you see the guy in his 60s driving the Vette.
All the time.
Right. He's driving that Vette because people are more likely to look at the Vette's ass than his. He's trying to, you know, so he's putting on.
I thought it was because he could finally afford it.
Well, you know what? It's a confluence of events, right?
Right.
Because
it is a shitstorm of events,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. And by the way, not everybody who drives that Vette can afford it. I point
that's
out
true.
Also.
That is,
you know,
true.
People
yes.
do ruin themselves for those things. So it's not necessarily a question of convenience. Now I can finally get my Vette. I have friends who
plenty of people are driving cars they can't afford. Right.
But I have guys who in midlife crisis who have been saving their whole lives and they're actually ready to buy their midlife Vette. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Which is interesting. It's very upfront.
Right.
But the truth of the midlife Vette, in my opinion, is all about self-esteem. It has nothing to do with driving faster, certainly, and better handling. I don't think those are the issues that
it's
the guy's
like another
looking for.
Mirror to see you through.
That's
another set
right.
of another lens to see you
That's
through.
Right. I am no longer me with a pot belly walking around in clothing that is dated. I am now me in a hot car. I am now me with a hot chick.
And people do make assumptions. I mean, they do project qualities onto you based on your car.
Yeah,
they do. I'm not saying it's right, but
if
they
you're
do.
Over 50 and you're in a Vette, what's the quality they apply?
Well,
you know what they're saying?
Yeah. Midlife
crisis. The midlife crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So at a certain point, you're not fooling anybody but yourself. However, that's the whole idea is to
However,
yourself.
Should you meet that person and talk to them and they're comfortable in their skin and you realize they're just driving a car they like because they can and that, you know, then that opinion can change.
Yes.
Because it's all about being comfortable in your skin, right?
Yeah, I guess. I have a thing about the trappings of prestige anyway.
Well, sure.
Beyond age, beyond midlife crisis, in general, people who form their appearance to the world, the facade that they present to the world through the accumulation and display of wealth or items or whatever that, you know what, if you're new agey, you don't even have to be. It's a costume. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It's all costumes.
Yeah.
So if your costume is designer stuff and hot sports cars, you're projecting some – you're trying very hard and at a very high price to project a certain image to the world, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
So it's a question of what image do you want to project to the world. Personally, this is me speaking for myself. I'd rather project the image of somebody who cares about animals and the earth and, you know, and my physical health. That's
– right.
If the world's going to look at me, I'd rather look like I did yoga than like I went to a car dealership.
And you talk a lot about physical health in this book,
yeah.
right? We're going to – walk away with lots of information about how you can not stop the aging process, but maybe slow it down a bit.
Yeah, I'm not, and I'm not averse to using, you know, over the counter formulas and things, and you know, like I did yesterday. I did. There's a brand called Jack Black that made a different Jack Black, not the Tenacious D dude, but that makes like a chem peel that's like looks like a little Stridex pad. You use it a couple of times a week, and like
your skin does look nice.
Does it honestly?
Yeah.
And apparently it works.
I wish you could see this guy's skin.
But apparently it works. So I do all that kind of crap. And,
right.
You know, I make sure I get some sun, so I have a little color, and I make sure I exercise, and I'm a vegetarian, or pescatarian, so I tend to eat very well. And one of the things that I got out of my midlife crisis, just to circle back on midlife crisis, that you have a choice. You can go self-destructive. You can go depressed. There's all sorts of – it's like a midlife crisis is like walking into the Columbus Circle subway. Like, well, you've got so many choices of trains that you can get on from there. So my choices were to determine that I am going to enjoy my waning years. As I say in the book, you know, midlife crisis is when you stop counting up and you start counting down. And so if I'm going to count down, I want to make sure that this particular vessel, this body, is going to get me to the finish line in pretty good shape.
So what do you think – because you have this convergence of – especially if you have couples of similar age, right? You've got this convergence of moodiness in the house, right? You've got whatever she's –
We haven't had that.
No, not at all? Not even a little bit?
No, not really. No, perimenopause, that kind of thing?
Yeah, no.
No, not in my house.
So you've got the perimenopause and you've got you know, perimortality.
Yeah, totally. And, well said.
Okay. And what do you think is the best advice – for just sort of dealing with, you know, acknowledging your man's also in that place?
I believe the wise man once said, discretion is the better part of valor. It's not necessarily a question of choosing your battles. It's a question of when you choose to fight them. Your adversary, let's just use that term for lack of a better term, your adversary in one of these situations where somebody is melting down or having a chemical thing that's taking place that might be altering their general bon humeur, that's probably not the best time to point that out to them, right? So if there's a chemical...
How do we know, though?
If you seem like you're just
bitching about the almond milk or whatever.
Except the blanket understanding. Get a bigger understanding. Know that you are in this period, right? So if you're walking through a rising tide and you get hit by a wave, you don't blame the wave. You just go, oh, that's right. I was walking through a rising tide.
Okay.
Right? So acknowledge where you are in the larger sense. So that when the wave hits you, you go, right, of course, I'm walking through a rising tide.
So let's just all give each other the benefit of the doubt, right?
I didn't mean to suggest that, actually. Yeah. Believe it or not, I didn't mean to suggest
really?
That. Really? No, because there's a lot in the book about something I call controlling your radius. And controlling your radius means that you are proactively creating an environment where you can have your crisis in peace and find the things that actually mean something to you so you can pursue those and see your way through this and come out the other side of it with a sense of purpose and a joy of life. So how do you do that if you are locked in a house with, in my case, I don't have kids. You have kids. So that's its own thing.
Right.
But if you're locked in a house with somebody who's perimenopausal, well, you're also crazy and you're trying to establish this world where you can excel and flourish and smile occasionally and have a nice time, you have to control that radius. So one way to do that is if your partner or whomever, if the kids are melting down, whatever your particular radius happens, your immediate radius. And by the way, your radius could be the supermarket. You know, it's not only in the house. You bring your radius wherever you go. It's still your surrounding area. You have to – how do I say this? You have to exercise judgment on an ongoing basis on how to properly, continually change that radius to your benefit. So if my wife is having a chemically induced problem, number one, I have to have the clarity of mind to acknowledge the difference between a chemically induced problem and a legitimate problem. Two, I can't really dismiss either.
I was going to say the legitimate is a
doesn't matter.
Total judgment call. Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
Because it's all legitimate, really.
When
as far as processing with each other and keeping things
emotionally safe. The interaction is actually occurring.
Right.
But it doesn't make the complaint legitimate. Or it could be. One of my favorite old sayings is just because I'm having my period doesn't mean you're not an asshole.
There you go.
Right. So so there is that too. But on the other hand,
just because I'm having a midlife crisis doesn't mean you're not squashing me.
Right, exactly. But I may not be. That's right. So I have to figure out, am I in this instance squashing you during your midlife crisis?
Or but it's all grist for the mill. It's all worth talking about and becoming closer and more intimate.
Or not talking about. Where I was going was sometimes it's worth not talking about. So if I'm I'm having a – if I'm hypoglycemic – I don't mean right now. I just had a sandwich. But I mean in general. I have low blood sugar. When I get really low blood sugar, I become an asshole. And it's almost like a form of insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, my daughter's this way. Actually.
Okay. Well, it's very much like perimenopause because it can come out of nowhere. It's mm-hmm. insidious. It might occur and I didn't even know I was hungry. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, I'm a douche. So the same thing happens in perimenopause. Somebody's just walking through her life mm-hmm. and her chemicals, you know, come up behind her and smack her in the back of the head like a prank. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, she's not in a very good mood. So if I'm smart, I am looking at the situation. So if she's bitching about X, Y, or Z and I go, okay – I'm a sane person. I know that this is a disproportionate reaction to mm-hmm. X, Y, and Z. Or maybe there is no X, Y, or Z, and I'm getting shit on for it. So I have to weigh that situation. And if it's a situation where I am aware that it is a chemical upheaval, discretion is the better part of valor. What I do is I acknowledge as if it were real. Mm-hmm. I keep the situation as calm as I possibly can. I weather the storm and get through it and get past it and try to put the whole thing to rest with as little, you know, rancor or discourse as possible. Mm-hmm. And then later, during a sane moment, I will say something to the effect of, we're going through this together. Right. And what happened just now earlier was clearly something that was that occurred because of the perimenopause.
Right.
Try to have the mantra be nice. Mm-hmm. Literally. I mean, that's a real conversation. And
that's what I meant by grist for the mill is that not in the moment, not in the tornado, but it can in that moment, like where you say, we're going through this together. That that creates trust and intimacy and a deeper connection in your relationship because you were able to do damage control.
That's right.
And not take take her to
it's being able to identify whether or not the fire you're about to throw water on is actually a fire before you throw the water on it.
You got that? Did everybody get that? Okay. I think you're going to have to read the book to clarify that. But that's good. That's good. So how do we find you? How do we find your book? Tell us more.
Well, I'm right here.
Well, yeah.
I'm in the studio right now. So if you're looking for me, you needn't look no further. I don't know if midlifecrisisbook.com is launched yet or if the link to Amazon is, but it will be within the next week or so.
You're definitely on Amazon.
I'm definitely on Amazon. So if you go to Midmen, The Modern Man's Guide to Surviving Midlife Crisis, and it's my name is Steve Oakes, O-C-H-S, not like the tree, more like the fill. So that's the way to find me. And you'll find the book on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com and hopefully buy it.
It's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to finish it completely before I do my review.
So. Thank you.
All right. And you can find me on Facebook at Sophie Venable. And also please like the MILF Talk page if you'd be so kind. If you're on iTunes or SoundCloud right now, please click subscribe because that would help my cause. Be sure to download your free goal setting workbook from my website, makeyourlifefabulous.com. And my book, MILF 101, is also available on Amazon. Thank you for listening.
I've already put up my review.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And thank you for listening.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.